No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that will try to talk about issues that you care about. I'm your host, Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from Washington, D.C., America's last colony. And tonight we have a special guest. We have Representative Gene Wu, who serves the people of District 137 in the Texas House of Representatives. Prior to being elected in 2012, he served as a prosecutor in Harris County District Attorney's Office, where he sought justice for thousands of crime victims. He is currently an attorney in private practice. And welcome to our show, Representative Wu. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And, D.C. statehood now.
Oh, God bless you. Let's talk about what's going on in Texas, because we don't get it up here in Washington, you know? Unfortunately, I think that the Democratic Party nationally is a little out of touch these days with what goes on in places like Texas, you know? I grew up in a working-class community, and I have a lot of working-class friends all over America. And, I really don't think in Washington we really get it. But one thing I want to talk to you about, which I find really disturbing, is Bill 763, which allows unlicensed religious chaplain counselors to counsel students. Yes. And you know, what happened to the separation of church and state?
If there is ever a place that will make people from D.C. feel better, and Texas's politics is by far much more nuts. This session, and I've been there for a decade now, and it's always been kind of crazy, but this session really, really took the cake. It was just bonkers. And stuff like this kind of bill that in years past would have never even gotten a hearing committee, not only got voted out, but made it through the floor and got it on the governor's desk. The political climate is just so different now.
And is the House, the Texas House, is it run by the Republicans? It's majority Republican.
I almost choked. Everything is run by the Republicans. They have every statewide seat. They have every major state office, the House, the Senate, the governor, everything is Republican. So, you know, kind of like the problem of when you're in charge, everything's your fault. And, you know, everything that's wrong with the state right now is because of the Republicans' poor leadership.
That's just crazy. Well, thank you for being a Democrat. And what does this really mean? You're going to put a religious counselor in each school? Go ahead, please.
I think the way to understand this is that there has been an inherent push in the past decade to push for things like vouchers, to push for things like vouchers, for those who don't know, is essentially allowing government money to be spent in private schools. And private schools around here are all religious. And this is, years past. Now, we kind of talked about it and go, nah, we're not going to do that. Now, the conversation is very different. And I think people see what the makeup of the Supreme Court. They see some of the other things that have been done in other states. And they're really like pushing hard on sort of like breaking this separation of church and state concept and just destroying it completely. There's members who have basically said that, like, you know, the government should basically be a theocracy. I mean, they're not. I mean, they're not even shy about it. And you know, they're not only wanting direct religion in government and having government participate in religion, but they're pushing a specific type of religion. Right? It's not just like, well, we just want religions in general to be more inclusive. It's, no, it needs to be Christian. It needs to be Judeo-Christian. It needs to be Protestant. It needs to be whatever it is.
And is it fundamentalist? I mean, do they accept Catholics and Episcopals and, you know, people like that as Christians? And or is this just fundamentalist Christians?
I think it depends on who you talk to and where you're looking. I think on the surface, I mean, you have to remember in our nation's history, Catholics were not considered quote unquote Christian as a mainstream white Christian until like long after JFK, right? Like, right. Remember when JFK ran for president, people were like, is a Catholic allowed to be president? Can they, is it like legally possible for them? Don't they answer to the Pope? Can they even swear an oath? So those kind of questions popped up not that long ago, right? And, wow. You know, nowadays, for the most part, everyone just sort of like ropes everybody in. But from a practical standpoint, especially in Texas, I think when they're talking about putting Christianity into the government, they're talking about Protestant. They're not talking about Catholicism. And they're certainly not talking about Mormonism.
And what about the court system? Are people challenging this? I mean, it seems to me that the founders were very worried about this sort of thing, especially majority rule. So right. they made sure the government had a provision to separate church from state. And are people challenging this law in court?
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point. And, you know, I mean, what frustrates me in dealing with a lot of this is so often people who talk about this country, who talk about, like, the greatness of the country, like, have just no concept of the history of this country and where things came from. I mean, the Founding Fathers, you know, came from a period where the people who settled this country, they understood that people who settled this country came here for religious freedom, because government was so intricately tied to religion that it became became an issue of patriotism. It's like, well, if you're not this religion, then you're an enemy of our country, right? And so they saw that and said, hey, look, we can't let this happen again. And so, I mean, I think the Founding Fathers very clearly understood that religion needed to be separate, because everyone thinks that you're protecting religion, or you're protecting the government from religion. And I think the mistake is that what the separation of church and state is really about is protecting religion from government. Because as powerful as you think your church is, nothing comes close to the power of the government, especially when there's money and resources and power at stake. The amount of resources and money that the wealthy are willing to expend to gain power, to do what they want, to make more money, is unbelievable. And if they need to co-opt your religion to get there, then so be it. That's what's happened in the history of the world. Look at the Catholic Church in the type of the time of the papacy. I mean, there are popes that ran the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages that were like, you know, throwing orgies and all this stuff. They don't care, because it wasn't about religion. It was about power. And I know we're doing our best. ACLU, many other groups are here. We're trying to work on a lot of these bills. We're trying to kill them in the legislative process. And we're definitely gearing up to sue to prevent it. But again, you know, I think part of the reason that people are pushing me so hard is because they see the makeup of the Supreme Court. They see the makeup of the Fifth Circuit that Texas sits in, and they're pretty confident that this Supreme Court is going to continually slice away at this fundamental protection.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Representative Wu. And it's very, very scary. But let me ask you, why there was an amendment put on the bill that chaplains be at least as qualified as they were required to be in prisons and military bases? And it got defeated. And the original bill passed 84-60, so it's pretty clear. Yep. But why would you want counselors in schools that are unqualified? You know, what are they going to say if a pregnant girl comes to them for help or a boy that has a drug problem? What are they going to say? Pray? I mean,
says, my parents beat me because they think I'm gay.
Right.
Or a child who comes in, I mean, just any number of things. So, yeah. I mean, there were a lot of other things that we put in the provisions. I mean, like, look, and we talked about the sort of like the issue of plurality of, like, what about other denominations? What if somebody, a school board in an area is mostly Catholic and somebody says, well, can I have someone who's not a priest? Could I have a Protestant minister, right? Or somebody says, well, I'm Muslim. Is it possible for me to talk to somebody who understands my cultural values? Like, why should I, if this is the only school counselor that you're providing? And again, I think it's really important for everyone to understand, they're not just putting these people in schools. They're putting these people in schools in place of actual trained and licensed counselors. That is the insanity of this. In a time when our students are being tested through their eyeball, I mean, just out of their minds, and they're having to deal with school shootings, they're having to deal with mass murder, they're having to deal with all these things going on, instead of providing the funding to provide trained and licensed counselors, we're putting these untrained, unlicensed, what do you want to call them, clergy? They don't even have to be ordained ministers. Right.
Wow.
Someone that is registered with the church and says, well, I'm a deacon. That qualifies them. That's it.
And they're paid. Right? They're paid by the state to do this. Right.
Right.
Like,
well, and that's the thing is, I had an amendment that tried to say, like, look, you guys are putting this bill forward like as if this was a volunteer thing. Right. Instead of, if you want to just volunteer, sure, volunteer. The whole point of volunteers is they don't get paid.
Right.
And I said, like, look, you can't expend state funds on this. Right. So that helps with a church and state issue. And it was voted down because their intent is to pay them. The intent is to provide jobs for people to do this instead of trained and licensed counselors. Their intent is to put religious leaders in a position where they now are protected by the school, where they have employment with the school, right? And, you know, they're in a position they can do whatever they want. And this is insanity. At least, you know, I get it. This is Texas. We're going to do crazy stuff in Texas. But at least do crazy stuff with some guardrails. And the Republicans voted all the guardrails down. And what drives me crazy is we are just coming out of a period of shock from watching the Southern Baptist Convention. The news from the Southern Baptist Convention is still rolling out. We still have not identified all of the sexual abuse victims. We know there are about 703 perpetrators. We don't even know how many children in total were abused. And we're just getting through that news as we pass this bill.
That's crazy.
And we're going to take these same people who have not either been abusing children or hiding perpetrators who abuse children, and going to say, oh, you know what? Why don't we put you in the classroom? Why don't we put you in the position where you can have these nice closed-door conversations with these kids?
Wow.
This is a time bomb.
Yeah. It's a time bomb. And you know, I mean, we all know the danger of religion, right? Is that when a religious person says something, there's no debate because God is God. So if God is telling you to do something, you don't care. You know, it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. You got to, you know, you got to do it. I mean, I remember Joan of Arc saying to her troops, they said, there's no chance we can win against the British. She said, so what? It doesn't matter because that's what God wants me to do. So, you know, that's just incredible to me. So let's talk about the next one, which is that HB3, House-Based Bill 3, which requires an armed person at every public school. Now, what the hell does that mean, an armed person? My wife's a librarian. So,
Yeah, and this was the frustration on the floor is that what they did was they tied a lot of the revenue and additional funding to these bills, right? That's their gotcha. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the United States as a society as a whole, I mean, especially in Texas, you know, red states have far, far more gun violence related deaths than blue states by wide, wide margins, especially in the deep South, right? Yeah. Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, those are the murder capitals of our nation, not Detroit. And time and time again, we've said, hey, the solution to too many guns in our society is not more guns. Right. And not only are there now going to be more guns in places that are vulnerable, there are going to be more guns held by people who are untrained. These are not police officers. These are not a special agents. These are not anybody with actual training. It's just going to be some retired guy. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, as someone who works with kids, on my day job, I represent kids who have gotten in trouble. Right. And, you know, we, on a daily basis, we have issues where we put licensed police officers into classrooms, into schools. And the problem with that is, you know, if you're not trained correctly, if you're a hammer, everything around you looks like a nail, right? And we're going to have we already have these situations where instead of de-escalating a child who's having a mental breakdown or having a crisis, instead of de-escalating it, you have people who are used to just wrestling people to the ground and handcuffing them and taking them away. But kids don't react well when that happens, especially a kid that's having a break. And with time and time again, we've seen these situations where an officer ends up choking a kid out. An officer ends up tasing a kid. Officer ends up just beating the crap out of a kid. And we say, like, hey, could we not have just, you know, maybe like just restrained them a little bit and then talked them down and worked it way out like trained professionals. And the concern is those are officers. Those are officers who are trained. Well, now we're going to take untrained people, people who don't have any experience with children, there's no requirements that they have any specialized training to deal with classroom situations with kids with mental health issues, anything like that. No requirements at all. And saying, here's a gun. Go to it. Mm. You know, they tried to allow teachers with guns into classrooms in the past. And the teachers basically said, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
We're not trained for it. There's no reason why we're going to do this. We are simply not trained for it. And teachers who say, like, well, look, we're untrained. We don't want to do this. So instead of going to that, now we're going to say, well, not even teachers, not even somebody who has a relationship with these kids, not even someone who has an understanding of child psychology, child behavior, and how to de-escalate. We're just going to take random people, give them a gun, and say, protect this school. There's another time bomb that's going to go off.
It's crazy. Something's
going to happen.
It's crazy. Yeah, I agree with you. Something's going to happen. And, you know, you work with kids, so you know this. This is the problem in Washington, D.C. right now, is that we have 14-year-olds shooting each other at a alarming rate. We had a 14-year-old. We had a 14-year-old that was trying to carjack an NFL football player, and he shot him twice. One of the people that the running back for the Commanders, and you know, you think a 14-year-old would be intimidated by a guy that's 6 feet 2 and 280 pounds, but he wasn't. And then when he had the kid in custody, he found out that he murdered a 13-year-old. You know, and today, last night, he found another 14-year-old dead, and they're being killed by other kids. And you know, because you work with kids, teenagers are myopic, and they can't see the consequences of what they're doing. They can't see past the end of their noses. And you know, and the more guns we have around, the more guns they're going to have access to. So it just
And here is, I think, more one of my frustrations, not with just the Texas politics, but I think our country in general. Yes. And it's this sort of idea that we're so, like, puritanical, we're so concerned about sex, anything to do with sex. Like, if there's a... you know, there's a wardrobe malfunction and somebody's nipple pops out for like a fraction of a second, like that is that makes the news for the next 3 weeks, right? But we have no concerns about violence. That we have no concerns that our society glorifies violence. We espouse it. We just, you know, people on the internet tough guys are always like, oh, you know, well, good thing I was in there. I would have, like, you know, snapped his neck and, you know. Right. And, you know, there's so many people, especially, you know, on the gun side, people have these fantasies of how they're going to stop all this stuff and they're going to be the good guy with a gun and they're going to blow all the bad guys away. And we come to this and then we are surprised. We're surprised that our children are also fixated on violence. Right. And this is not a screed against, like, rap music, a screed against video games or anything like that. I'm just saying, like, in a general sense, far more than entertainment, because, you know, you look at other societies, they have the same video games, they have the same music, but they don't have the same amount of violence. And we basically have made it acceptable, and we have made it so easy for children to obtain handguns, to obtain weapons. We've made it so easy. Like, I represent a lot of kids, and basically the kids I represent are all charged with, like murder and robberies and things. And nobody even asks. Nobody bothers asking, where did you get the gun? Because there's no point. Because they know, every prosecutor knows how easy it is for $30 or $40, anybody, and even a child, can get a gun off the street. And part of this is, you know, if you want to talk about a failure in public policy, a failure in how we spend our resources. You know, a lot, if you look at these cases, I guarantee you, if you look at these cases and you look at this child and you look at any other child that's in the same circumstances, you will find just a ton of similarities in the way they were brought up, in the resources they were allocated to them, in their frustrations with school, in their peer groups. These are things that can be fixed, but we just choose not to fix them. We can put more resources in schools so that schools have counselors. So when these kids that go from an A and B student suddenly drop and become a D and F student, they start acting out in class, they start doing all these things, we could put counselors there. We could put resources there to go home and talk to the family, say, hey, what's going on with Jimmy? His behaviors are retrained. He's becoming more violent. He's more angry. Let's find out what the problem is and get these resources to them. You know, we could, when we had a massive budget cut in 2011, the state, like, slashed $5.4 billion out of the state's education budget. Huge, unbelievable cut.
$4.8 billion?
$5.4 billion, right?
Oh, my God.
And the school, do you know what the first thing they cut were? They cut after school programs.
Yeah.
And I talked to cops, and the cops say, you know, that year, within months, we saw the highest enrollment in gang membership that we have ever seen. Just immediately after, as soon as those cuts were made, as soon as those programs ended, we saw kids enrolling in gangs, joining gangs. And I mean, like anybody who's listening to this, you can't be shocked about this. This is what happens when you have kids with no resources. Yeah. When there's nothing else to do, they're going to go do what's available, right? And
yeah,
you know, I had a cop. I was talking to a cop, and when I first got elected, he said, "Hey, do you know when girls get pregnant?" And I'm like, "You mean like time of the month?" He goes, "No, time of the day." And I was in my mind, I'm like, "Well, like 12 o'clock after midnight?"
Yeah.
That's wrong. Girls get pregnant between the hours of 3 and 6, because that's when you get out of school and before mom comes home and makes dinner.
Right.
When there's no adult supervision, when there's nothing else to do, that you go find something to do. And this is the same with gang membership. This is the same with violence. This is the same with kids doing stupid stuff. All these kids that get charged with serious stuff, I promise you, they didn't start with the big stuff. They had little things throughout, and I guarantee you, if you looked at their school record, you could see a change in their behavior. They didn't start out being the bad kids, but I guarantee you, they slowly worked their way up, and there were red flags after red flags. And if you have not ever read it, take the time to read the profile of the Uvalde shooter, the Robb Elementary shooter that happened in Texas last year. Read the profile on just the nature of the young man who shot up the school. And you will see red flag after red flag. And you say, and there were things like, you know, he was upset about things. He was angry about this. He was being bullied about that. And it's like every single one of those things, we could have done something about it. And the question is, why didn't we? And the answer always is with what resource? Because we had there's nothing to do with it. We are the wealthiest nation in the world. I mean, Texas is now like the ninth largest economy in the entire world by itself. And somehow we can't afford to put counselors in schools. Tell me that's not insane.
It's insane, and you know, and we do it all the time in terms of cutting programs for children. We talk about how they're the future, but they're the first to get cut because they can't bring pressure on the government. They can't vote. I mean, you look at Washington, D.C., we have the toughest gun laws in America, but the thing you said about kids getting guns in Texas, well, that's the same thing in D.C. They get them, you know, and we really do have tough gun laws. You know, they've been challenged over and over and over again. And they'll probably be challenged now. And first of all, let me say how much I admire you for taking these stands. I've spent the last 17 years of my life trying to convince Republicans that the people of Washington, D.C., who pay the highest taxes and serve in the military at higher than the national average, ought to be equal citizens. And I can't even get one. We haven't gotten one of them. Not one. We passed the statehood bill through the House the last two sessions, all Democrats. We have, you know, over 40 co-sponsors in the Senate, all Democrats. Yeah, it's crazy. So I admire you for taking the stand.
My home area is Harris County, and Harris County has about 5 million people, 5+ million people in it. And like, you know, we kind of joke around about how like DC and Harris County, we have more population. The Harris County has more population than half the states in the nation.
Yeah, 5 million.
But we have the same two senators. DC has more. I think DC has more population than like at least like 25% of the states of the nation.
Yeah, seven. We have more population than Wyoming and Vermont. Yeah. And we have a bigger economy than nine states.
Yeah. So, you know, it is very frustrating, and I'm very. It's insane to me that the people of Washington D.C. do not have a vote. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Let me ask you something.
That the capital of our democracy can't vote.
Yes, that it really is crazy, and hopefully we'll be able to end it soon. But because we're the only country in the world that does it. But let me ask you a question: any aspiration to run for Congress? To get a national
sure. I mean, of course. Look. This is what I always tell people. Every elected official says, I'm happy with the job I have. I'm doing the best job I can.
Absolutely.
But realistically, anybody who is under 65 who tells you they're not interested in higher office is lying to you.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think the real question is, do you want to run for a higher office? Because, you know, if like Ted Cruz suddenly quit tomorrow and the governor says, hey, do you want to be appointed to be a U.S. senator? I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
But if the question is, hey, do you want to run a statewide campaign, raise $50 million minimum, and have the entire half the country beat up on you? I'm like, the question is, I'm not sure I want to do that. Right. You know,
it's become crazy.
If the opportunity was there, we can talk.
Well, you know, it's become crazy too when you say $50 million. Now, I worked my first campaign, I've worked many campaigns, and my first one was for Jimmy Carter. I don't think we spent much more than that on a nationwide campaign. And by the way, now they spend over, each side spends over $1 billion.
Yep.
You know,
they
spent $800 million in Georgia to get two Democrats elected. So, yeah, you're crazy. It's crazy that you have to raise that much money. And
I think, you know, one of the biggest mistakes I think our nation has ever made. And I mean, I don't want to put this on the whole nation, but the ruling on Citizens United.
Yeah.
Has been catastrophic for our nation. It has given so much power to the ultra wealthy. Has made money so much more important than I mean, money was already really important in politics, but after Citizens United, that was the only game after that. And you know, like people from around the world who watch our politics, and I chat with people from like Europe and Asia and other places, and they are just floored by our politics. It's like, what do you mean? You can just, there's unlimited donations. You know, Governor Abbott got $1 million check from energy producers after the big freeze because he made sure that there was no bill to pass that would basically that would harm their business. And he got $1 million check. I don't mean like a whole bunch of checks that added up to $1 million. It was $1 million check. And people were just like stunned by it. And around here, everyone goes, well, that's just par for the course. And people around the world look at this and like, are you kidding? How is this legal? How are people not in prison for this? You can't just give $1 million. Right?
Right. Well, yeah. Well, and you talk about, If anybody under 65 lying, if they say they don't want higher office, any politician that tells you somebody gives them $1 million and he doesn't pick up the phone when they call and he doesn't do what they want is also lying. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And the guy who wrote the check ended up suing Beto because Beto called it a bribe. And sued Beto, and the courts just dumped that case out and go, I don't think Beto's wrong.
It is a bribe. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's a bribe, and unfortunately, as you have already stated, it's a legal bribe. It's yep. one that you can get away with. It amazes me. It amazes me.
Well, I'll do you one better. Okay, this is the one that always. So I'm an attorney, and I talk to attorneys from other states, and the thing that always like drops them to the floor is I tell them, hey, you know our judges are elected like by the general population. They're like, oh, that's really weird. You know, most other states don't elect their judges. And I said, no, not only that. Not only are they elected, but they're also partisan. They have to be Democrats or Republicans. And they're like, what? Because, you know, to be a candidate for a party, you have to agree to the party's platform. And how can you be unbiased if you have a platform? And I said, hey, that's not the best part. Not only are they elected, are they partisan, but they can raise money. They can take money. They can take money from people in the community then, from law firms and from lawyers and everyone else. And they're like, and their jaws are already like just dropping. And this is the one that gets them. It's like, not only that, not only are they elected, are they partisan, they can take money, but they can take money from people that are appearing before them that day.
Wouldn't that disqualify them as a judge? I mean, if they did that and your client got convicted by the judge, you know, in a judge trial instead of a jury trial, wouldn't you be able to contest that because the guy gave him money?
No one's made that challenge yet. I mean, but the criminal side is not really where it's at, but the civil side, I mean, like, you know, you represent clients that are involved in a $200 million lawsuit.
Right.
You know? Then you might both parties might be writing like substantial checks to the judge.
Yeah. I mean, I ran my own business for 25 years, and I could see that. You know, when we lost a politician, he went to jail for taking an FBI bribe, and the reason they caught him is because a contractor came to the FBI or came to the city and said, "We really need this contract." Because we're a small company and times are hard, and we really need the contractor and we really want it and we have the best bid, but we've got this guy saying, if you want the contract, give me $200,000 and you can have it. And the FBI, of course, said, yeah, no problem, we'll take care of it. And they did. Yep. They caught the guy. They caught him in a sting. But, of course they do that.
No, here we don't even need that. There's people asking me, well, what's the corruption? How's the corruption? I'm like,
right.
What corruption? What do you don't need to pass envelopes under a table in Texas. You have unlimited campaign contributions. Why? Why would you bother passing an envelope of cash? Just donate to their campaign. I mean, look, I have another great story. So we had a very prominent attorney here who lost who won a major mass tort case, right? Like worth billions. But the judge ruled against him on one factor that cost him $150 million, right? Out of the big pot that he won. Mm-hmm. And because he got mad at that judge, he personally recruited someone to run against that judge and then wrote a $250,000 campaign check to the challenger. And that's the only donation that challenger had that entire cycle, and the challenger won. Mm. So we don't need envelopes under the table. You know, our corruption is pretty open.
Yeah. And you know, look, I've been a Democrat my whole life. I think I was born a Democrat. And you know, we did a show where we brought a bunch of senators and congressmen who had formed a committee against this practice. But, you know, the Democratic Party nationally supported Trump people, gave them money in the primaries in the hopes that they would win and then they would be easier to beat. Right. And I mean, that mentality, I'm like, what? We're giving money to, you know, it was just crazy. And I can't remember how it worked out, but some of them didn't win. And you know, it's just, yeah, money in politics is out of control everywhere. But that's crazy. And I used to work, my first guy I ever worked for was a guy named John White. He was the most elected man in the history of Texas politics. He was the Secretary of Agriculture. And I was in Texas. And I was a fundraiser. I did direct mail fundraising. And he said to me one time, he said, well, explain this to me. How does it work? I don't know. And I did. And he said, well, when I ran, you know, we just got a bottle of bourbon and a hotel room. And people would come in and put a bag of money in the closet. And, you know, give us a bag of money. We put it in the closet and count it up the next morning. That's what we called fundraising. And I thought that was crazy, but this is even crazier. It's amazing. Well, can we move on a little bit and talk about Bill 29, which bans COVID mandates? Is that so? If a local health organization were to, from Harris County, were to tell you that, you know, they needed a mask mandate, you couldn't present a law and pass that?
Right.
Crazy.
You know, I feel like our society and especially our elected officials have very poor short-term memory. I still cannot get over the fact that, like, 1.2 million Americans are dead from COVID. Like,
right.
I mean, like, we can't even get down. I mean, like, we're rounding up to the next 100,000, right? 1.2 million Americans are dead, more than all wars that this nation has ever fought combined.
Yes.
And we're acting like it never happened. And, you know, it just boggles my mind that people are so blasé about it. I mean, like every single person in this country knows someone who died from COVID. It is impossible for you to not know somebody who died from COVID.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you have to remember, like, almost two-thirds of those deaths occurred after a vaccine was available. Mm. And we're still acting like, I mean, frankly, we're acting like COVID is gone. COVID is still killing around 300 people a day. Right.
Yeah.
And we're acting like, oh, it's no big deal. It's all over and everything else. And like, dude, I mean, COVID can not only come back, but it can come back in a completely different form. I mean, like, you know, if there's a dramatic turn, it makes a big mutation jump. It could come back in a form that is no longer, that's no longer affected by the vaccine.
Right.
And
right.
We can't I think these kind like of laws are just so short-sighted, so narrow-minded that, like, it's like you're the final irony is like that is that I think something will happen. Something will happen. They're already trying to reformulate the vaccine right now to make it more effective against the new variants. It's not hard to imagine a scenario where COVID could come roaring back because close to half the nation is not vaccinated. You know, the anti-vaxxers are now stronger than ever. And then now we've now just not only tied our hands behind our backs, but we've tied both legs to the arms as well. You know, just another ticking time bomb ready, waiting to go off.
Yeah, it seems crazy to me. And, you know, I even look at situations like Dr. Fauci, how so many people turned against him in the end. And he was the guy that was ringing the warning bell. You know, he was the guy that was trying to warn us of all this. And in the end, he was right. And it's just crazy. You know, people don't want bad news. They want to think, you know, you can take a pill and it'll make you better, or you can, you know, whatever. And it's just crazy because we've lost, you know, a representative. We lost people that were 80 years old, but we also lost people that were 20 years old and healthy from this disease. It's Absolutely crazy.
1.2 million Americans. Mm. I mean, I think that number is now so big that people can't even process it. That people don't even think about it because it's just so massive that their brains can't wrap around it. But I just don't know what is wrong with our society. That we're still having 200 to 300 deaths a day. And we're acting like it's all done.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But then again, we ignore gun violence every single day, right? We have mass shooting after mass shooting after mass shooting, and we're like, yeah, whatever, it's just par for the course.
Yeah. And we say ridiculous things like the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. No, the way to stop it is to take the gun away. You know? Yep. I mean, what is so complicated? But
we can
about
do all
idea.
Of those. We can have good guys with guns, but we can also take the guns, make it harder for bad guys to get the guns. Right?
Well, we had that fight
with the Uvalde families. The Uvalde families, all they asked for was, hey, raise the gun purchasing age of assault rifles to 21.
Right.
And because people always say the gun advocates always say, oh, laws don't work. Well, obviously that law worked because the Uvalde shooter attempted to purchase those same weapons for years through straw purchasers, through surrogates, whoever. He got denied every single time because people follow the law. And so, like, had we had the law at 21, we might have prevented him from committing this mass murder for another few years, if nothing else. Mm. And that's all we wanted. That's all the families asked for. And they would not vote the bill out of committee, even though we had the votes, until the very last day. And it was too late then.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Those weapons should not even be available to the public. You know, there's no legitimate reason to have an AR-15 rifle. You can't go deer hunting with it.
No, but it makes you look like a tough guy.
Exactly. Exactly.
You feel really tough if you hold it in your hand.
Yeah, no, I
get it. And then if you have your entire family holding guns on your Christmas cards, then people will know how much of a badass you are.
Yeah, and we got politicians doing that. We had some woman do a commercial. I forget where she was, Wyoming or Montana or something, that was running for Congress, and she did a commercial where she fires an AR-15. So you know that she's not only a badass, but she can follow through, you know. I mean, it's just crazy. And then, of course, there was a guy in Georgia that sent out the Christmas cards with his family and guns. And, you know, this is just so ridiculous. Well, look, Representative, we're kind of running out of time soon. So I want to ask you, is there, because I want to have you back sometimes. There's so many questions that I didn't get to ask you. But I want to ask you, is there anything you want to talk about that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, so I would love to come back and talk about the rise. I would be remiss if I didn't do this. Talk about the rise of anti-Asian hate. Sort of like these, you know, that are affected. Our nation goes through these waves of anti-immigrant, anti-Asian sentiment. We saw it in the 1800s. We saw it in the early 1900s. We saw it in the 1940s. Yeah. We saw it in the 1970s. And then now we're coming to another wave. Asian Americans are being targeted throughout this country. Where people are passing laws against us. People are doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Our community members are increasingly becoming victims of random crime, random hate crimes throughout the nation. We got to do something about it. And I would love to come back and talk to you and talk to your audience about that.
Well, we'll make sure that happens because that's absolutely true. You know, one of the guys that I worked for first in politics, when I had my own firm, was a guy named Bob Matsui, who actually was in an internment camp during the Second World War because they ran, I don't know what they thought Japanese Americans were going to do, you know, but they rounded them all up and put them in concentration camps. And so, racism is always a part of the American fabric, unfortunately.
I'll throw an extra one on that. Of the people who were, you know, the United States during World War II rounded up Germans as well. They rounded about 10,000 German nationals.
Yeah.
But they rounded up 120,000 Japanese Americans, two-thirds of whom, two-thirds of the people rounded up by the U.S. government were natural-born U.S. citizens.
Yep.
They were not, born nationals.
And our experience really is that people that come from immigrants in this country are the hardest working, most patriotic. You know, my Italian ancestors on my mother's side were just that way. They were, you know, all of them fought in the Second World War. All of them were great Americans, you know, and believed in America. So it's absolutely crazy. Well, Representative Gene Wu, thank you for representing the people of Texas and for standing up for what's right. And we're so happy that you were on the show, and we'll have you back again soon. Thank you.
Thanks.
And do you have children?
Yeah, I got two little boys.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
DC statehood.
All right. God bless you. And now I just want to take a minute. At the end of each show, we play a song usually dedicated to our guest or the issue which we talked about with our guest. But tonight, I'm going to do something a little different. I unfortunately lost a friend, a great friend, on Friday, a woman named Bonnie Gillespie, who became part of my family. I met her 35 years ago. She was my neighbor. We got close. She ended up being a bridesmaid at my wedding and being godmother to my oldest child. She was a wonderful, benevolent person that took care of everybody around her. And most important, she was a great role model for my daughters. She was raised in an abusive environment that would have crippled most people. But Bonnie got beyond that and worked her way up to the top of corporate America. She was a leader in her industry, and she will be missed by so many people in Washington, D.C. So, and in California, where she's from. So we want to play tonight's song in honor of Bonnie Gillespie. And I want my listeners to know that this is someone who I deeply loved, my wife loved, my children loved. She was an amazing person, and she deserves to be honored. So tonight we play the song by Stevie Wonder, which kind of sums up the way we feel about Bonnie. We'll see you next week, folks. Thanks so much.
Give the people their right to vote.